wat kan huaradu ste wa kwego tanya don has gigo then on ze wat ahun sadaje un kwai hu wen hadi wa nodus ne ne aboriginal voices oska de wa nyawar oska ne jota fm cfrc.
And it is 6 o'clock right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. And we're glad to have you along on this gorgeous Tuesday evening. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Ani, Nichkiwe, Doug Farquhar, Dijnikaz. Meanwhile, Sean Story, Esna Midwa, and Ishnabi, Noewin. And we are all set for Aboriginal Voices here at CFRC. Very exciting week. We've got a huge, we've got a whole table full of papers I'm going to have to go through to talk to you about a little bit tonight. Yes, we do have some music and we have some interesting concepts. But the one that came to mind right away for the show is the one we're going to start with. And that is the end of 5 years for the Governor General, who is Mary Simon, and she has now passed the torch on to now Governor General Louise Arbour. And yesterday, June the 8th, I had a chance to watch some of it, but I was really impressed with the whole process that the federal government and everything related to what is the Crown's representative, and that is Mary Simon, then being able to pass the seal of Canada to Governor General Louise Arbour. And that process is what I'm going to share a little bit with you. And if you think this is worth extending, then you definitely can find the whole thing on national television. And I think CPAC also has some of the segments done. I'm not sure how much they have, but I was able to watch and be part of this whole thing. And I'm going to bring to you several components that if you saw it yesterday, that's fabulous. It started around 9:45 or so in the morning, but it was a gorgeous day, just like this one, 21 degrees Celsius, sunny. It was just perfect. Not a lot of wind in Ottawa, not a lot of wind here right now. So, yes, people are strolling along listening to us here at Aboriginal Voices. But what was really important to me was at the beginning, they lined up the Governor General's guard and in leading into the Senate, the Senate building in Ottawa. It's impressive. It's the old 1867 train station downtown Ottawa, right next to the Rideau Canal, just across the street from the Chateau Laurier and a little bit over from the War Memorial, the Memorial to the Unknown Soldier. So that's Ottawa. But there was broadcast right across Canada, but around the world that way. And the very first thing that I wanted to share was the outside. There were three Algonquin elders there, and one spoke. They weren't very well mic'd, so it's not great for us to hear on the radio right now. But a group called where did I put them? The group that did their drumming was the drumming circle called Eagle River Singers. And they're from Kitigan-Zibi. And there were also dancers there, but only the women's fancy dance dancer did her routine around and shared her regalia in front of all of the guests, the Mary Simon, Governor General Mary Simon, the Governor General who was going to be coming in, Louise Arbour, the Prime Minister of Canada, and a number of other dignitaries, along with family members with them. So But basically outside the Senate building. And I just wanted to give you a sample of what it's like. So I have that for you, and then I'll come back and tell you a little bit about the process inside the Senate. Took you outside, yeah, outside the Senate in Ottawa. That was Eagle River Singers, and they're from Kitigan-Zibi. And it was quite emotional for some of the people. But across the street, I could see that there was a person standing there, an Indigenous person, and part of the time standing with an eagle feather in one hand and holding it over her head. And I thought, that's great, you know, because this is an honor song to Mary Simon, who spent 5 years working with everybody in the country and represent, and also with the Crown in England and representing the Crown. But she brought a lot of changes and helped with getting things organized for the next person coming in. And that's Louise Arbour, who's going to be coming in with a different set of issues that she would like to focus upon. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So next then, they moved from outside and the delegation went in to the Senate. And I'm not going to give you all of that information here from the transmission that they had. But I want to share part of the very beginning, and that is that they ask people to have a seat, and then they go on to talk about a land acknowledgement, and then invited a guest up to speak to give a First Nation elder. So the other is Verna McGregor. and she does speak in Anishinaabe Mo'in, and there's no translation. So, but I think that if you hear her voice and the intonations up and down, and you know that that some of the people in the Senate gathering that yesterday, June the 8th, one or two of them were in tears listening to this, and I suspect it's because it's a chance. This is what reconciliation is, including the First Nations in some of these special events. So I'm going to get the podium speakers ready, and we'll get you set up here. Very good. And then when we come back, we'll do a song for you. Okay. So here are the speakers from the podium.
Veuillez vous asseoir. Please be seated. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge that we are gathered on the unceded territory of the Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation, who have been present on these lands since time immemorial.
Forte d'une formation et d'une expérience professionnelle dans le domaine bancaire et immobilier, Lenny McGregor
founding herself on her professional past, she has been very instrumental in promoting development of the indigenous peoples and fighting domestic violence. She is also the president of the Algonquin Cultural Council.
Welcome, Elder McGregor.
Hello, everybody. Bonjour à toutes et tous. I'm very honored to be here today, and I'd like to honor our honored guests and our future, the future governor, her excellencies, and the past excellencies. We're, as Algonquin, we're known as Yomamaninuwak, the nomads, and we would meet here in the summer. Because this area here is so special that we're known for the birch bark canoe. Why we would meet here is at this confluence of the rivers coming together. And it's similar to if you've been in a lot of our communities, the Medicine Wheel, where there's many teachings to that. But the biggest meaning is that it represents balance, even individually, your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental. But it's a reminder to that what connects all of us is that we're connected to the earth, the waters, the fire, and the air. And what I did today, too, as well, is our ancestors were one of the first to meet the newcomers, most notably Samuel de Champlain. And this led to a conflict in the past, what they call the Beaver Wars, which led to this great peace gathering in 1701. And from there, they created one of the symbols, which we see as covenants, which is this sharing belt of 1701. And it represents the three nations, really, which you had the British crown, the Anishinaabe in the middle, and the French crown. So again, it was our understanding is the sharing of the lands and the caretaking of the lands for future generations too. But they're also called peace belts in terms of how do you weave together different ideologies so we coexist together without destroying each other. And that's the significance of these, and that's why I'm very honored to be here today. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to say a little prayer. Part of our protocol, too, is the offering of tobacco. And again, that was one of our sacred medicines in the medicine wheel. And I may ask you to stand, if you can. Nani buene nabigis, s'il vous plaît, enlevez. I also have my eagle feather, and again, too, the significance of the eagle feather is that it has a higher view, such as leadership. You need a higher view. We We don't go kakina chimino pomazo watch chimnoyak, chiwana kiwa, jenabigis, miguachon jikakina gangishan don no shame on the getting in the kimonon. Skaki question kason in the kimonon, we don't go kakina pomazo jikon jenagadwablan, kakina guchna in the kimonon. Mom de get nishnabeyaki. Miguachon jikakina etek tishagon keys, the big keys as a shedjanung shuk. We don't quite end the Nokomis Nano Jane Agdwablan, Kakina Guchna B, a Shetnima Shomson, Nano Jane Agdwablan, Kakina Gujia, Ishkude, Miguachonje Nasewin, Kagimi Jen, Chimino Pomadzian, We don't quite Kakina Chimino Pomadzawaj, Mondegegi Akwazajik. We don't quag Mondege, Ninjino in Daganak, Nimashomson, Nan Gokmis Nan, a Shetna Dubano Jishak, Mondege, Nabashka Dagamak, Kamashed, and Niswak, Shwin Mishnan in Abigis. We don't quite cooking our Wesley, Saka, Gishan, Don, cooking our Gutch. I should we don't quite cooking our Mom de Gay, we weasen a jig, the Margus jig, Arcus a jig, Kaye, we me God would jig, non gum, Chiwana key watch, and our biggest, conscious quat neguede, Simene, Mia, Miguach, 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 Miguach. Miigwech is thank you in Algonquin, say merci en Algonquin, j'ai dit ça quatre fois, I say it four times again, to honor the place we're here today, because I find it interesting that Parliament and the leadership, the Senate, is at that confluence of the four rivers coming together from the four directions, and representing that it's a big responsibility to bring in balance for the collective. So, miigwech, everybody. Merci à tous. And have a wonderful gathering. And congratulations to the future Governor General. Miigwech. Oh, the mother bin, you may be seated.
Thank you, Elder McGregor, for your wise words. I would now like to take a moment to explain a tradition that was carried out before the ceremony began, the lighting of the kudlik, the traditional Inuit lamp. Made of soapstone, the kudlik burns animal fat and uses Arctic plants as a wick. These lamps are traditionally used in the north to bring light and warmth to homes. Elder Ripa Evic Carlton is here with us today to tend the kudlik for the duration of the ceremony. She has dedicated decades of her life to supporting community social work in Nunavut, as well as founding a healing center here in Ottawa, which provides a variety of Inuit community support programs. Elder Evic Carlton, thank you for joining us today.
Milos Choirs and Period Instruments present Of Love, Loss, and Longing, East and West, 12th to 19th Century. Milos explores theme of love and loss through a range of historic, poetic, and musical expressions from Europe, Persia, Syria, and Al-Andalus. Featuring the music of Isaac Montevardi, Handel, Ibn al-Khattabi, Darwish, and more. Join us on Saturday, June 13th, 7:30 p.m. at St. John the Apostle Church, 88th Patrick Street, Kingston, with guests Sadif Amini, Iranian Santur, Arzang Rafai, Iranian Tar, Abu Aram Zanidin, and Darbuka. Tickets are $30, available online at milosearlymusic.org or at Novel Idea.
Hey, hey, hey! You want to kick the summer heat and get a nice treat? Don't hesitate to make a date to visit Old Farm Fine Foods. Pizza, frittata, sausage rolls, sandwiches, soups, and more are ready and waiting to get in your belly. Plus, you can also buy fresh and frozen food to prepare at home. Pop into the shop Monday through Sunday between 8 to 6 at 204 Berry Street. And don't forget to follow Old Farm Fine Foods on Instagram at oldfarmff to get the scoop on the latest goodies. Old Farm Fine Foods, comfort food you can count on.
Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca.
Every day you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? You need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The charts on CFRC.
That's to get you up and dance, I guess. That's Jerry Cans with Mamaktu. And yeah, their Jerry Cans are from the far north. And so, you know, it's kind of nice to bring music from across Canada to share, especially when we're talking about events like the whole process that went on in Ottawa on June the 8th with the transfer of responsibility as Governor General from Mary Simon to Louise Aubo. And there were a couple of other former governor generals who were there at the ceremony, too. So one of them is connected to CFRC many, many years ago, and that was Adrian Clarkson, who was governor general of Canada. And many years before that, she was working as part of the CBC and came to CFRC for a summer workshop. And I don't know enough about the summer workshop. My assumption, she was giving the workshop. So, anyways, that's a connection. CFRC with the whole process with the Governor Generals. But I wanted to share with you the beginning of the whole ceremony with the land acknowledgement and then with the elder giving some words of wisdom. But it... On June the 4th, our little local newspaper, the Frontenac News, and Jeff Green is the author here. I think he's also the editor of the paper. But he had attended Central Frontenac Council meeting and before June the 4th. It probably was just the day before, something like that. I'm not sure. But because all this seemed pretty fresh in his writing. But he said near the end of an otherwise routine meeting of Central Frontenac Council, Councillor Philip Smith made a request. And, my first response was, well, that's just a small council meeting. But he had asked that a proposed change to the land acknowledgement that is read out by the mayor at the beginning of every council meeting and at official public events be deferred until members of the council had a chance to see the amendment in writing before holding a vote to put it in place. And I thought, oh, okay. Yeah, sometimes people spend time talking about the land acknowledgement. I hope that you, the listener, have thought about this as you go in listening to all the land acknowledgements. And if you had to write one or you had to speak on behalf of the recognition of the land where you were working, living, or visiting, then just think about that for a second. But this was at a council meeting. And my personal understanding of council meetings is that they send out the agenda with all the accompanying materials, then you need to spend time reading them, understanding what they are before you go to council meeting. But anyway, this motion actually was put in under new business, so that maybe it was, took a while to get the information through the staff, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, the motion was put on by Councillor Susan Irwin, and she submitted a motion acknowledging National Indigenous Day on June 21st. That reminds me, everybody, June 21st is National Indigenous Day. The whole month of June is National Indigenous History Month. Erwin had explained to the council that she had a meeting with Chief Doreen Davis, who is a member of the Charlotte Odjiwon, and proposed a second motion to include a flag-raising ceremony at Charlotte Lake Beach on June the 19th at 11 a.m., and that's when the Charlotte Odjiwon flag would be raised. And a similar ceremony had taken place each of the last 3 years, attended by the mayor, township staff, Chief Doreen, and other members of the Charlotte Odjiwon executive. So if you're looking for a place to go and see what's happening, June 19th at Charlotte Lake Beach, I think that's just over the bridge as you're going north on 38 towards Highway 7. Right in the you can't miss it. It's right there on the main part of Charlotte Lake. Then there was a second part proposed, and I won't go into that. But the land acknowledgement part was one that had to be read out to everybody. But apparently, it wasn't written out in text for them to actually sit and think about it. But this is what it is. I wanted you the existing acknowledgement is the following, quote, "We'd like to begin by acknowledging that the land on which we gather is the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin Nation," unquote. And Chief Doreen Davis and Councillor Susan Erwin, and they now wanted to add this, which is quote, "In particular, we recognize the enduring presence and stewardship of the Indigenous peoples and honor their connection to the lands and waters within Central Frontenac," unquote. So that was the suggestion, and we'll see what happens. The first meeting that they're going to have in the council is going to be after, it'll be June 23rd, so it'll be after the June 21st date. So anyway, we'll see what happens. There was a bit of conversation that went on back and forth in that, and Jeff Green, the author of this article, and in the Frontenac News. If you want to see the whole thing, you can go online, Frontenac News. And I don't see it here, but I know you can get it, Frontenac News, and probably .ca or something like that. Anyway, that's what I have for you. Now, the other item, a brand new piece of music has come to us. And I'd like to thank Cynthia and Peter. Cynthia had listened to our show in May about the Red Dress Project, and it's continuing on. And Susan, Cynthia, I want you to know that I, in the past 2 weeks now, since we broadcast that, did the interview, and then on June 2nd broadcast the interview with you, I've been looking for more people who are involved in the Red Dress Project and continue on. It's going strong, but I have a song, and I talked to the fellow who wrote it, Evan Redsky, and he was thrilled to give a shout out to Cynthia and to Peter to thank them for being interested still, because he just wrote a song and published it on May the 5th, 2026, and he released it that day because that is, in fact, Red Dress Day. You can go online and check out the lyrics, but I'm going to play the song right now, and I just want to let folks know that, yes, there's still a lot going on with reconciliation, and still a lot of awareness. And please keep it going. I was just in an office yesterday on Queens campus, and when I walked into the office, the red dress hanging on a coat rack, and I thought, oh my, what's that, and what's happening here? And when I did ask, people were saying, oh, that's one of the red dresses that had been hanging up on Queens campus out in the when a lot of students were here, basically in October. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. Anyway, so here comes Evan Red Sky's song, and I hope you get a chance just to think of the words here, and it all has to do with the red dress.
They won't be forgotten. I won't lay this to rest. Another brown woman, working for the city and a hustle on the side. When her son was born, she took a vow to straighten this life out. But the life of a brown woman was a lie she had to live without, live without. Well, Soleil had a fight in her, the same fight in her bloodline. Didn't take shit from the cops, transition house guidelines. She knew how to call a bluff, had conviction in her doubts. But no one heard a brown woman, got a life she had to live without, live without. Troubled white man, discarded like some junk mail with his weekend's beer cans. But she had no dying words in the papers or the press. Just another brown woman, just another red dress.
I'm Sarah Funnell. I'm an urban family physician here in Kingston.
My name is Jamaica Cass. I am a rural family physician in Tiandanega.
We are both First Nations physicians, and we are co-chairs of the Advisory Committee for the Indigenous Health Day, Understanding, Respecting, and Transforming Care.
This is a full-day continuing professional development event through Queen's Health Sciences to educate our interprofessional colleagues on Indigenous ways of knowing and health throughout the life cycle.
We have an amazing lineup of speakers, including Indigenous dietitians, midwives, nurses, cultural experts. What else, Jamaica?
And diabetes educators who will be presenting with some of our Western healthcare colleagues to provide a truly two-eyed seeing approach to treating Indigenous patients in a culturally safe way throughout the life cycle.
Yeah, I'm excited about this amazing day of education and also the possibility of purchasing some amazing art from the Indigenous artisans market as well. It's going to be a great day.
As we welcome vendors from the local Indigenous community, and although we are sold out this year, truly there has been an overwhelming response, and perhaps it's something that we could offer again in the future.
Well, there you go. Thank you to both of those organizers for the Indigenous Health Day here in Kingston, June 17th, I believe. That's next Wednesday. That's a week tomorrow. Yes, and I'm hoping we're going to be able to bring some of the comments from the people who are presenting to you here on Aboriginal Voices. So, yes, I'll be there. I'll be learning a lot about it, and I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, what do we need to know about it? Healthcare and Indigenous health in that case. But I had a nice chat with them, and we're going to be able to hear what they had to say in a couple of minutes, I guess, because one of the things that we did come up with was this is going to be from zero to infinity, almost the life cycle of humans and their health and health needs. So we'll have some fun with that. I did an interview with them yesterday, both Sarah and Jamaica, and they said to use their names that way, Sarah and Jamaica, even though they are doctors, and they explained a little bit who they are. But I want you to hear from them, because I really enjoyed my conversation with them, and it made me do some thinking as I drove home. So I hope it does create something for you to think about as well. And then following that, I have a George Leach song, Semaya. You'll know why after you hear the actual song, the conversation. Well, thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy days for both of you. We have Sarah, and you're going to be talking. Say hi to everybody so they know your voice.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sarah Funnell.
And we have Jamaica. And Jamaica, tell me a little bit about you.
Hi, folks. My name is Jamaica Cass. I am Ganyange Haga from Gandege, or Mohawk. My home First Nation is Tyendinega, and I have the absolute privilege and pleasure of working there as a primary care physician.
This is an exciting day for me, because I'm going to learn more about a day that I'm going to be able to participate in. And I'm there as someone who's going to be the listener for June 17th here at Kingston. Tell me a little bit about why the two of you got started with this day. It's Indigenous Health Day.
So it really came out of expressions of interest from the health provider community in Kingston and at KHSC. People really reaching out and requesting just more training, more knowledge about Indigenous health, trying to sort of demystify this black box of traditional medicine and traditional knowledges in healthcare, and people really wanting to understand kind of what is involved and how it might look different throughout the life cycle, and also how they might expand their own knowledge to improve the care they provide to their own Indigenous patients.
Now, interesting how you go about doing it, so that it's a conversation with people in the group, who are attending.
And I understand there's not just doctors attending, so who else is going to be involved as attendees listening to it? But also we'll get to talking about the panels.
Sure. We have many local people joining us. It just so happens that through our relationships and people that we know in the community, we've gathered quite a great group of individuals to come and share their knowledge with us. We have Indigenous dietitian Jody Johns, and we have cultural advisor Curtis Maracle. We have an excellent keynote. I'm super excited. Laura Maracle is coming to speak to us about their experiences in the healthcare system to really set the tone of the day to understand how reconciliation can be activated in the healthcare system. Who else do we have?
And I would also add, we have Dr. Karen Hill.
Oh, yes,
so
of course.
She is a family physician, Mohawk from Six Nations of the Grand River, and she's the only family doctor in Canada to have trained as both a family practitioner in terms of Western practice as well as a traditional healer. And so she really embodies 2-eyed seeing in medicine.
Think of me going in, and I've trained at university in health, but I'm not a doctor, okay? So the people in the audience who are going to be hearing this, or the people that are going to be able to hear what, when we put on the radio later as a series, looking at healthcare, we've looked a little bit at healthcare rural and remote. And I left the urban part till the end, and you're already started me down the road of looking at the urban segment of our show. But I'm thinking, what is it that you want us to get from the conversation? Diabetes, understand that right away. But what else is there?
I think I would say I don't expect this day to run the way that a lot of what you might consider medical conferences do, because as you said, like, that's not our way. Mm-hmm. These are really meant to be conversations between interprofessional experts, really kind of delving into their lived experience providing culturally safe care. So, and we really wanted it to be that way because we expect the audience is going to be interprofessional. We don't want, you know, our colleagues in pharmacy or, you know, personal support workers to be confused by, you know, medicalese and not really take away, you know, the important kind of key points of the day. And that's important to us.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to also let your audience know, our audience that's listening, know that we've been planning this day for well over a year. And part of what took that long was we wanted to be really thoughtful about it. And so Jamaica and I are the co-chairs, but we do have an advisory committee that we've worked with to help guide us. Mm-hmm. So there's some, we have an elder on that committee and non-Indigenous allies as well, and an interprofessional group. And so when we thought about what would this day look like, it took us a while. We knew that we couldn't cover everything that we'd want everybody to know in one day. So we landed on a life cycle approach from, you know, coming into this world to leaving for the spirit world. And we know that we're just going to scratch the surface of a lot of the topics along the life cycle. But it was something that we landed on because we couldn't decide on one aspect of a human's life to cover. So we're just covering little bits of the whole life cycle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we wanted to make sure that we were doing something that was hopefully broadly applicable to the folks who might attend. And that seemed like the best approach.
Mm-hmm. Like, we were shocked when we heard we were sold out. It was so exciting. You know, when you have a birthday party and you worry that no one's going to come, but then they do. So, it's pretty exciting.
I just learned that when you mentioned it, so I thought, oh, that's great. You know?
Oh.
Yeah. So I got my registration in fast.
You're set.
Yeah, I hope so. The other thing that I'm looking at is that I've been working with some folks who, they're much younger than me, okay, and in their 40s and 50s. And I've been asking them the same kinds of questions about what kind of health care are you wanting now, not when you were 20 or maybe 30. A lot of them just thought 20s and 30s, I'm invincible, and yeah, I can get cut or I can break an arm or something like that. But now they're starting to talk about other issues, but they don't know where to turn. You know, you mentioned diabetes, and that would be one. Heart difficulties, people don't always recognize the heart and stroke, although it's advertised on television, radio, and, you know, internet. But a lot of the people in the communities, especially rural and remote, don't really want to talk about those issues. So will that be something that might come up in your sessions with people?
I think that is one of the benefits of walking folks through the life cycle, is we can try to touch on some of the issues that at least we experience as providers, as folks wanting to talk about and wanting to hear about what are things that are common, what are common questions or things people might not know.
Basically, I'm looking at the people 40 to 50 in that age group, and they're now not sure how to ask questions related to some of the issues that they may have. And we've had a few talks with the doctors talking to us from a dock, from a lake shore, and you know that's really good, because everything calms down rather than in a doctor's office or on a campus like we are at Queen's. So just wondering what do you think we might be able to go through for people that age group and the concerns, you know.
I hope that with the lineup of speakers and topics that we have, people will gain skills in having these conversations. You know, we're trying to promote a two-eyed seeing approach with probably a more heavier focus on Indigenous ways of knowing. Mm-hmm. And the Indigenous approach to healthcare is holistic care, seeing the whole person and seeing their family and their community around them, not just body parts. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I hope that the audience that joins us will find new ways of talking about some of these issues. You know, we have a really exciting, speaking about being 40 or 50, which is our exact age group.
Oops.
That's okay.
That's okay. Better than the alternative.
We are particularly interested in hearing about traditional ways of approaching menopause. And so this is not a topic that was discussed much when I was in medical school. And from Indigenous perspectives, I'm really interested in hearing Karen Hill talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that we hope to emphasize in some of the other talks as well is what the transition through different stages of the life cycle looks like. Because there are these rites of passage that culturally we have, but that are often stigmatized in Western society, right? Like we kind of tuck old folks away in Western society. We don't revere them the way like Indigenous cultures do. Like our elders are sacred to us, and so, you know, their health is of the utmost importance, and then, you know, some of those other transitions. And so I think you'll hear a lot about that at this day as well.
And what surprised me about like the interest is, well, first of all, you found out about it, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. But also, I've had people reach out to me that are not physicians, not nurses, you know, community people, Indigenous community people, asking if they can come too. And so that's exciting, and it puts the pressure on a little bit to make sure, you know, we run a really good day. But it's really exciting.
Is there a possibility that we can share this on the radio in different segments? And it'll all depend mostly on, well, your permission, yes or no, that's okay. I'm still going to be there. But it'll depend on each of the speakers. So we'll invite them to be part of the show this way. But it's because we want to share with people who aren't able to get here for the whole day.
Yeah, when we had that conversation internally, the answer was like self-determination is key, and we would give our speakers the autonomy to kind of make that decision themselves. But we trust and respect them, and we would bring that decision to them as co-chairs. And if nothing else, that just shares like how much appetite there is for this knowledge, right? Yes. And learning in this way, and that's really encouraging for us.
And that brings my next question. You don't have to answer it, but why are you doing it in June when there are no university students? Well, I won't say no. I just bumped into a whole bunch today. But there aren't as many around who may benefit from some a day like this.
Well, I think the day called us to have it on this day. It aligned with Jamaica's schedule and my schedule, so that's one thing, which they're busy schedules. And it's also
smack dab in the middle of Indigenous People's History Month. And I think, you know, we really need to balance the joy in celebrating Indigenous strength in June with the sort of solemnness that happens on September 30th and on May 5th, which is Red Dress Day and then the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. And so what better time to celebrate this idea of Indigenous knowledge throughout the life cycle than right in the middle of Indigenous People's History Month. And because we want our audience, our folks coming and learning, to be able to have conversations with our experts, like, we had to keep the audience like somewhat small, like, again, like, just keeping in mind that we wanted to offer this day at like as much in keeping with our ways and much less in the sort of Western didactic educational fashion, we kept it small, and so we were kind of okay that the campus is a little quieter now, although the medical school is still going. So there are some health-oriented folks still around.
And the day is designed as a continuing professional development course, so really directed at people in healthcare that are working in healthcare at the moment. So we know, Jamaica and I do a lot of work in medical education, and designing curriculum and spaces and opportunities to learn about Indigenous health inequities and how to address them. And so, like, I love teaching medical students. I feel every time I teach them, they know more and more each time, right?